Hey man, this is Arthur from Sweden. I've got a couple of questions about skill checks because I noticed that they're used in very different ways. So some DMs, mostly in games like D&D, let players roll a dice and then describe the outcome. Other DMs, in more narrative games, let players roll, tells the outcome like this was a part of the success, and then let the players describe what happened. But I've also seen a DM delay the rolling as much as possible. So when we repaired a thingy, then we did not make a dice roll until that thingy was used for the very first time. That way, we really did not know how the reparation went. We couldn't game it at all. So what's your take about those methods? And do you maybe know about other ways of using skill checks?
Thanks so much for sending that question, Arthur. I liked it a lot. So much that I'm gonna make an entire episode out of it. Hey, I'm James. And today we're gonna dork out about Dungeons and Designs on Crumbling Keeps, the Dungeon Dorks. What are dice for? It might seem like a silly question, but there's been a lot of thought put into when to add dice into RPGs, when it's important to roll, and why we're rolling them. And I think that ties a lot into your question. Now, I'm not gonna lie, your question spawned a lot of things in my head that might be out of the bounds of the answers, but I think we're gonna get to some good stuff here, and hopefully, in the process, answer what you were looking for. But again, why dice? These little blocks with various numbers on them. And we need multiple, a D8, a D6, a D10, a D12. What's that about? Well, the obvious answer is uncertainty. And if we look back at, say, like OD&D back in the very beginning, there was this idea that the game was largely a kind of a simulation-based, almost as if the skills you learned wargaming would be useful as a battlefield general somewhere. But you can't account for everything. You can't just compare numbers. There's the unknown. So when two forces clash, you roll dice to see how it turns out. Now, you can obviously, based on like probability, have things in your favor, and that hasn't changed today. Often, players want to roll skills they have higher numbers in because it skews things more in their favor. So, if they have a choice between, say, persuading someone to do something and deceiving them to do something, and largely it's the same effect, they're probably going to go for the larger number. And yes, there's an argument there that that's too much metagaming, but also don't we as people often tend to play to our strengths? So certainly uncertainty is a reason we roll dice. We don't know what the outcome will be, and we need a way to figure it out. And that plays into my second big reason as to why we roll the dice, and that is tension. If we were playing the game and we knew how it was going to turn out, where's the fun there for anyone involved? We're just going through the motions. We're reading a story that we already know the end to, or watching a movie we've seen 1,000 times before. But we don't know how that's going to end. And that is where this tension comes in. I want to jump across this sprawling cliff to try and get to the other side. Can I do it? Well, let's roll some dice. And until that number comes up and I do the addition and figure out if it happened or not, let me tell you, I'm sweating bullets over here. So this is what dice are for. But then we can really get into the whole, there's so many ideas about this, when to roll dice. And personally, I'm not one that's going to tell you that there is a right and a wrong way to do this. There are certainly ways I prefer, and I imagine there's going to be ways you prefer. And sometimes that changes from game to game or group to group. But when to roll dice ultimately is a personal call. I know some people like to brag that, oh, we played for 3 hours the other day and not a single dice was rolled. And that's awesome if that's the type of experience you're going for. There's some argument there of like, well, if you're not rolling dice, so you're interfacing with the game system. And I don't really care enough to have that argument, honestly. If you're having fun, great. More power to you. But then also, that's not for some people. Some people would be bored senseless and they can't wait to roll initiative and get in there and kill some monsters. So, when to roll dice is largely a style of play thing. But we can look at some systems to kind of put that in perspective and to see, I don't want to say the absolutes, but different points on that spectrum. So if we look, for example, of old school encounters, which is Necrotic's gnome reimagining, well, not even reimagining, it's pretty much a reprint of BX D&D, Basic Dungeons and Dragons, a very early edition of the game, not to get into too much detail, versus say Pathfinder, and we'll say 2e because I've never played 1e. Don't ask me how I managed to not do that, but it's just never happened. So those are two very different points on that spectrum of when to roll. And so a lot of theory about like old school role playing, of which OSE, Old School Essentials, would be part of, is that if you're rolling the dice, you've probably already messed up. So one thing of note there is that you don't get experience points, or at least most of them necessarily, by killing monsters. You get it by gathering treasure and getting that treasure back to town. That's where most of your experience points are going to come from. So that incentivizes a certain style of play. You want to get treasure, not necessarily kill things. So if there's a dragon and you can sneak in their lair and get all that gold and get out without ever having to roll initiative, that might be great. So one of the things that does is it puts the emphasis on player skill over character skill, because that's one of the reasons we roll the dice, is to show our character skill. If I, James, know that, for instance, in most D&D, probably all D&D, a troll's going to regenerate unless you burn it. And I like, oh, hey guys, we should put a torch to that troll. That's player skill. Or if we're in a room and there's a puzzle in that room and all the doors are locked and there's a lever, and every time the lever's pulled, it starts ticking and there's a countdown. And eventually I figure out, like, oh, I just need to hold the lever till the countdown's done. And then all the doors open. It's not a bad thing. Again, that's player skill. There's no dice rolled there. But say we go the opposite route and we want to emphasize character skill. Same character, same situation. I want to investigate these levers to see what's happening here. And they roll a dice and the GM gives them information. That's player skill. And there's not, again, not a better or worse here. I think I do enjoy games more when the players have to like physically say where they're searching or what they're doing and use more of that player skill. But again, it's not a right or wrong. It's a preference thing. So we look back to that spectrum of old school essentials to Pathfinder. Old school essentials, you're rolling the dice because something is uncertain. And if something is uncertain, it might hurt your character. So being in a space where you're not rolling dice because you've set up the perfect ambush, or you've like tricked the dragon out of their lair and there's no dice to be rolled and you can just get that gold, is where you want to be. But then we look at, like, say, Pathfinder 2E, which I ran for the first time this year, and it was difficult in some ways for me to get my head around because it was the opposite of that, in the sense that so much of it can be just distilled to dice rolls. And so it was almost like dice rolling was, in a sense, like button mashing, and kind of in the way you go through a video game. I don't want to say mashing, like you're just mindlessly hitting buttons and hoping for something to happen. But in the same way you play a video game, you need to hit the jump button at the right time. You need to hit the punch button at the right time. And you hit that button, it rolls the dice, and you hope it rolls well enough. And most of your situations that you encounter at least in like a published Pathfinder module, to my experience thus far, that's how they're solved, by rolling dice. And that's a lot of probability, and that really emphasizes the game aspect of it too in some ways. But it's definitely a spectrum. It's a lot more dice work. Like, I can't imagine playing a game of Pathfinder and not rolling dice unless we're really not interfacing with the system at all. But then we also have like another spectrum I'd like to talk about, and that is what's leading these games. So if we go back to Pathfinder, it feels very dice led to me. The dice happen first, and then the outcome. Dice, then fiction. You say you want to investigate a room. You say you want to stab the person with your sword. Like, your stats and the numbers on your sheet lead what you want to do, if that makes sense. You don't just say necessarily, I want to attack. Well, actually, that is what you say. You don't say, okay, I'm going to try and sneak around the back of this person, stab him in the back with my dagger. Like, there's not rules covering that, right? I want to swing longsword, roll d20 to hit, roll damage. And again, if that's what you enjoy, that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's very much what it feels like to me. But then if we look at a game like, say, Blades in the Dark, Blades in the Dark feels like a stark contrast to that for me, as it feels very fiction-led. The players just say what they want their character to do, as if they were describing it in like a book or whatnot. I am going to sneak past a guard by hiding behind this bush. And that's when the roll is triggered. We're like, oh, cool, that sounds uncertain. Let's make a roll. And the other neat thing about Blades in the Dark, as opposed to Pathfinder, these two situations would be like, if it was Pathfinder, I'm like, great, you're going to roll stealth now. Whereas in Blades in the Dark, I'm like, great, what do you want to roll for that? And it's very player-led, which is pretty different than a lot of traditional RPGs. So that's another thing that's kind of cool to keep in mind. Like, oh, yeah, that's a possibility. So these are when we roll the dice, right? We kind of got less rolls to more rolls, fiction-led to dice-led, and everywhere in between. And so to get more back to the question about skill checks, and I think in a way almost all dice rolls are skill checks of one way or another, unless it's just rolling on a random table or a fortune roll or something like that. But if you're going on your character sheet and you're adding a modifier, in some way it's a skill, right? Like, be it it's my skill at attacking with my sword, or it's my skill at sneaking around, or it's my skill at not getting hit with a fireball, right? So I don't think there's a big difference between all of those as far as what I'm about to say. So the first question, and I think relates to what you said, is who describes the outcome? And I think that's somewhat a game by game thing, but it's almost more like a group by group, GM by GM thing as well. I think in my mind, traditionally the way it happens most is the player says they want to do a thing, and the GM says, great, roll this to make it happen. And then the player does, and based on how they roll, the GM then narrates the results. And I think there is room in that style for player input. For instance, if I as the DM are like, yeah, you absolutely killed that goblin, what's it look like? And these are like things that the player can describe in the fiction that aren't going to affect ultimately what happens. We know the goblin's dead. The player didn't just get to describe how cool it is when they do it. And I think that's where it matters a lot, because in different games, it gives different amount of power to the GM and the players as far as how much they can affect the fiction. If you're having a player describe the outcome and it's not affecting the ultimate, like, well, outcome, great. Like, if they had like, great, you succeeded in hiding, what does that look like? And then the player just gets to be cool and describe what they did. And that's not for all players either. Some players, like, especially if they're more toward like, say, the Pathfinder end of things, they just want to roll that dice and have it happen. a tale being told to them is optional. Some of them like that, some of them don't. They just kind of like to engage more with the mechanics in that fashion. And so, yeah, who describes the outcome? That's really up to the table. But then when are the stakes revealed, I think is a really interesting question because every role has stakes. If a role does not have stakes, please don't roll. You're wasting your time, the player's time, and the dice time. Don't call for rolls that don't have stakes. Just have it automatically succeed or automatically fail. We can argue about what stakes are. For instance, if there is a door that is stuck in, say, like, we'll use D&D for an example, because a lot of folks are familiar with it, 5e in particular, and you're rolling an athletics check to unstick it, maybe that player can't roll high enough to open that door. And you as the GM knows that because you've set the DC in your mind. But maybe there's a bunch of goblins bearing down on them, and it does add something to the tension of them not knowing that. Those are stakes. I'll allow it. It's up to you to decide if they're valid. But if it's quiet, they're in a room with this door, there is absolutely no danger of failing other than they have to pick up the dice and roll it again and again until they realize they can't. Stop, please. Don't roll. It's fine. You can just be like, the door is too stuck. There's no way you can do it. So now we've described stakes. Let's talk about when they're revealed. And this is again something that can differ very much game by game and group by group. When I think again about Dungeons and Dragons, a lot of times I will have the player attempt something and reveal the stakes afterwards. And I think that's good for tension. If you're trying to disarm a trap and that comes down to a dice roll in a system, and you don't know what happens if it's successful or a failure, that makes that an interesting decision. Oh, the outcome is uncertain. Do I really want to chance it? What if I fail and this whole building collapses on top of my head? Maybe it won't, but I just don't know. So those are some interesting stakes. The uncertainty is there. But on the other hand, if you give people the stakes before they make the roll, it's better for metagaming, which I don't necessarily think is a dirty word. We all metagame to some degree, right? And for instance, I'm thinking again about Blades in the Dark, which I've been playing a lot lately, so it's on my mind, which is a very fiction-led system. When the player says, oh, okay, I'm gonna try and punch the guard in the face and steal his sword, then the GM gets to describe what the position of that role is and how well it's likely to do. And in some ways, that's a way of me like setting the stakes beforehand of being like, oh, that's going to be desperate role, which is like the worst position you can be in, and isn't going to work very well. And that might not have been something that the player would have imagined beforehand. They might have thought like, oh, well, this guard's a little chump. I'm the best ever. They didn't know that this guard was like secretly a ninja. I don't know, whatever. And so that kind of informs them a bit of the stakes, and it makes sure you're all on the same page, which is neat because once they commit to that role, they'd have no reason to feel badly about it. Everyone's kind of agreed to the stakes beforehand. Because if a player hears that and they're like, oh, that is not what I thought. Okay, great, great. Let's scratch that. I'm going to try and convince the guard to give me candy instead. And I'm going to try and roll up something to persuade instead of something to hit. And I'm like, oh, great. That's going to be standard difficulty. Nothing really bad is going to happen about it. And it sounds like good effect. This person likes giving away candy. Like it just giving those stakes beforehand totally changes the situation. And again, there's not like a right or wrong there, but it is interesting to think about. And sometimes I want to try that with, like, say, D&D games and be like, okay, great. Here's what the DC is to make the check, and here's what's going to happen if you fail, and see how that would change things. When I do anything that's more Borg, for instance, I may not tell them what the effect afterwards will be for success or failure, but I will tell them what the difficulty is. And that's kind of a split down the middle there in the sense of like, oh, it's going to be that hard. Maybe I want to do something else, even if they don't know what's going to happen if they're right and wrong. Now, another really interesting thing that you mentioned there that kind of like made me cackle with glee is delaying the rolls. So in the scenario you provided, you as players repaired something, or at least tried to. And you didn't get to make the roll to see how it went until you got to that point of having to use it, which again kind of hits that tension button. Did we succeed? I don't know. And it takes away the ability to metagame in the interim. Like if you rolled then and you knew you did a terrible job, you're going to be a lot less likely to try and use that thing because somewhere in your heart of hearts, you know it's going to fail, right? So that's a really cool thing to do. And often in my games that involve stealth, I won't have the players make their stealth roll until they're inside of something that might see them. So they don't know if they are hiding well until they can be perceived. And it helps them not to just avoid dangerous situations because they can metagame it if they mean to or not. Now, the downside of that style of play is it puts more on the GM to figure out and deal with. And here's what I mean by that. Let's take potions, for example. Now, unlike, going back to Dungeons and Dragons and 5e, you can take a sip of a potion and you're like, oh, yeah, it does this. I know exactly what this potion does. And that is great for bookkeeping. The player can write potion of healing on their character sheet or potion of invisibility or whatever it is. It's not great for tension. They don't have to sip from that potion later when they're already desperate and wonder, oh, I don't know what this is going to do, but I don't have many options, and then take a chug, which is a lot more interesting in some ways, but it's murder on the bookkeeping, right? Because now the player on their sheet has blue potions, swirls of white. And at some point, they're going to tell the GM, I drink the blue potion or swirls of white. That's what a player sounds like to me. Blue potions, swirls of white. And now the GM has to remember where they have that information and they have to find it. And if they're running a really long campaign, this can get more and more difficult. If it's a one shot, whatever, buddy, turn back a few pages, you're cool. But if it's a longer campaign, it becomes a lot more difficult. So I think the tension of not telling players things like that, or like what they like having them roll later, I think that's great. I think that's a lot of fun. And I think that goes really just plays into my whole make interesting decisions philosophy. We don't know if this thing's repaired. So if we use it, we know there's a chance it is not going to go well, and we have to factor that into our decision making. And again, the downside is everyone has to remember that now. And so no right, no wrong. The identify spell is another thing like that. Oh, I found this magic sword. Do I get to experiment in the fiction for like three games to figure out what it does? Or do I cast identify and I know everything right away? Or do I just sit with it for an hour and it's attuned to me and I know everything it does and who the last person that used it was and what they had for breakfast 3 nights ago? So it's an interesting spectrum. So I know I went a lot of places with this. And it was honestly, I went more places than I expected to. So I appreciate you hanging with me for it. Arthur, again, thank you so much for the question. And I am sorry if I overexplained it, and doubly sorry if I didn't hit on the parts that you would like from it. But hopefully, you got some things out of this. And if you have a question that you would like me to answer on future shows, go to crumblingkeep.com/questions. crumblingkeep.com/question. And you get to record your own as well. I hope to see you there. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you have any questions about anything I talked about here today or on any past episodes of Dungeon Dorks, go to crumblingkeep.com/question and ask away, or just check the link in the show notes.